RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
As we've been hearing the last few days, our Prime Minister has been in Japan to discuss, among other things, New Zealand's intelligence sharing deal. It does seem to be a deal now with Japan. So we thought we'd find somebody who could give us their view on this. And Professor Robert Patman, is a professor of international relations at the University of Otago, joins us. Professor Patman, thanks for coming on RCR. Probably your first time, actually.
Probably, but it's very nice to speak to you, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a bit of time. Okay, so in your understanding, what has happened in Japan this past week?
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Luxon has effectively consolidated and confirmed an agreement that had been in the works for some time. It was an initiative that was launched, I think, last year, middle of last year, by the Hipkins government to, and I think it was an initiative was originally taken in 2019, and the initiative was taken to deepen our intelligence relationship with Japan. And Mr. Luxon has now confirmed that that process has reached the sort of culmination, and the two sides have agreed the wording of the agreement. And so this is quite a significant step. It parallels agreements that Japan has with other Five Eyes, other members of the Five Eyes intelligence sharing arrangement. That's the United States, the UK, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. So New Zealand has now become the final member of the Five Eyes to sign such an agreement with Japan.
Okay, and this is really all about North Korea, mainly, isn't it?
I think North Korea is a big factor. I think Mr. Putin's visit to North Korea recently drew attention to the fact that the security challenges of the Indo-Pacific are not confined to the Indo-Pacific region. That is to say, there's a war going on, a conflict going on in Ukraine, and North Korea has become a big backer of Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. And a couple of actors in the region have been doing business with Mr. Putin and not condemning his invasion. Who are those actors? China and also India. India has been less forward-leaning than China on the Russian invasion, but both countries, China and India, have enabled Russia to evade the full impact of sanctions which were imposed by the international community after the Russian invasion. So, yes, definitely North Korea factor, the North Korean threat in the Indo-Pacific region. Remember, Japan is very conscious, as is South Korea, of the threat presented by Kim Jong-un's dictatorship in North Korea. But it's interesting that it's a security challenge in the Indo-Pacific, which has, if you like, global reverberations with the conflict in Ukraine.
I believe we're going to dedicate a vessel to monitor sanctions against North Korea. At least that's what I've read in media last few days.
Yeah.
I mean, we hardly have much equipment. Really, is that just kind of just a bit for show?
Possibly. It may be symbolic. But on the other hand, it's better than being, if you like, turning the other eye or not doing anything. I think that what it does do, it communicates the message that the Chris Luxon-led coalition government wants to be seen to be playing a greater role in upholding international security. What is interesting, of course, which was paralleling Mr. Luxon's visit to Japan, is the foreign minister, Winston Peters, has recently stated that New Zealand simply must spend more on defence. Now, yeah, that will be well-received internationally because, unfortunately, it's fair to say that New Zealand has underinvested in, and this is not a party point, across successive governments for probably two decades, it's underinvested in the defence sector. So I think Mr. Peters is actually, if you like, breaking ranks with what seems to be public spending reductions across the board. I think Mr. Peters says there has to be an exception in the defence sector, and what that will involve in practical terms, I don't know. But I've certainly argued in print that we should put concerns about AUKUS to one side and start, if we want to make a practical contribution, start simply investing more in the defence sector if we have serious worries about our national security.
And it would be a different sort of investment compared to legacy, wouldn't it? Because now we can see from the Ukraine war, a lot of it is fought with drones and hypersonic missiles and equipment that legacy military, our one anyway, surely hasn't caught up with at that scale anyway.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. Obviously, any extra money would have to be carefully earmarked to take account of the sort of innovations you've been describing, Paul, and it'll need a careful rethink. But I think the important message is that if one travels to Australia, that often, and you speak to diplomats and military officials, that is often the thing that they wanted New Zealand to do, which the we've been spending between 1 and 1.3%, probably closer to 1%, for much of the last two decades. And we have done quite a bit in Ukraine. We've contributed about around 100 million in military and humanitarian aid.
By the way, do we know how that's been spent? I've asked Winston Peters for a line item. He couldn't give one. So we're putting money into stuff we don't even know what we're spending it on.
Well, right? I think the money has gone into the provision of ammunition, that's relatively a small portion of the 100 million, probably about 15 million or thereabouts in enabling Ukraine to buy extra weapons and ammunition. Quite a sizable chunk has been invested very effectively, actually, in the training of the Ukrainian army. We may have a small professional army, but it's very a small army, but it is highly professionalized, and it's been doing a very good job training the Ukrainian soldiers in both London and in Europe. So, I think, and there's been humanitarian assistance as well. I couldn't give you an exact breakdown of how much.
I know that.
Million.
He couldn't, so you won't be able to.
Well, if he can't, I probably can't, because he would have much.
But it's fair enough. The taxpayer should know, because this is a controversial war. Huge amounts of money.
Why is it controversial?
Well, it depends on how you see it, and we probably don't have time to discuss that. And another chat. But you know, it's a black hole of money. Hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars have gone into it. Ukraine was known as the most corrupt country on the planet, or in Europe, or wherever before
except
that,
except for Russia.
Okay, well, we're not giving them money. So, it is a point that the taxpayer, there should be something. Anyway, we can talk about that till the cows come home. Back to Japan.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You mentioned Putin's visit. They've come out now with a very comprehensive, and, you know, we haven't got time again for the details, but described as a comprehensive security pact, which involves not only military, but support for the country. Also, Putin said, if you're going to put other people's weapons in some place that can hit Russia, we're entitled to do it with people we know the same way. So where has this got us? We're in a worse position, aren't we now?
Well, only if you accept Mr. Putin's logic. He can't expect to invade a country and not face consequences.
Russia's immune to sanctions. We've seen that. So effectively, with Russia backing North Korea, so is North Korea. So they can just put the finger up now, can't they?
I wouldn't say they're immune. Russia's been hit quite hard by sanctions, but it could have been hit much harder. And if you've been following developments in the last week, the Russian economy showed there's been a fresh round of sanctions, and there was a considerable panic on the financial front. So I think the situation is, Russia's fighting a very expensive war, so irrespective of sanctions, it's going to, you know, have economic consequences. The point about sanctions, they do have limited value, and actually the value is usually long-term. I think you're quite right to draw our attention to this, because I think there was a sort of knockout expectation at the beginning of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that by taking sanctions, they quickly bring Russia to its knees. And that hasn't happened, because some of the countries like China and India have, you know, taken advantage of the sanction situation to buy Russian oil at discount prices.
Yeah.
Where does this leave us? Well, Mr. Putin has often made quite strong public statements. But at the end of the day, you can't be paralyzed into not helping, in my view, the victim of aggression, because the aggressor says, oh, if you do that, then we're going to, you know, we're going to threaten you as well. I'm not sure, you know, this country, our country, depends critically on a rules-based international order, an order based on rules, not the arbitrary expression of power. And at the moment, Mr. Putin has used power to try to annex a neighboring country. And if that succeeds, then that has global
It will succeed. They've almost beaten the Ukrainian military into the ground. I looked at the latest military update for that, and on all fronts, they're winning.
Well, I would disagree. And I would disagree because you only have to look in the situation of Crimea, where the Russian air defense units has been four knocked out in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, if Crimea wobbles, if it becomes a very difficult place, that has political reverberations for Mr. Putin. And the other thing is, you know, let's be quite clear. This hasn't worked out as planned. The Russians tried to annex Ukraine, take the whole country. They failed to take Kyiv, and they now occupy about 20% of the country. And so you could say it's a bit of a stalemate, but what's interesting is Ukraine has now switched to a strategy which many small powers switch to when they're confronted with a much bigger adversary, is using what's called asymmetrical warfare. And he's now got the opportunity, the Zelensky government, has got the opportunity to use Western weapons to target Russia, where some of the attacks from Russia are launched.
And then we've got World War III, Professor Patman. How do we position for that?
Look, there's a simple solution to this problem. Mr. Putin can withdraw his troops to the international borders of Russia.
Not going to do that. It's not going to happen.
No, but it doesn't mean we all have to roll over and say, oh, fair enough. You've gone in for a land grab and you got it, so everybody has to adjust. New Zealand would be the biggest victim if Ukraine's borders were changed by force, because we trade with 100 countries around the world. What is to stop Mr. Putin saying in 6 months' time, after people say, oh, okay, you can keep the land you've got in return for peace, and then he says, oh, I think I'd like some more?
I've watched news conferences where he's absolutely categorically said that they don't want that and laid out the terms pretty clearly.
But yet he people said he would say never invade Ukraine for Europe. three days before he invaded it.
Well, okay. Well, let's see what happens there.
Yeah,
back,
sure.
Back to North Korea. Well, back to the whole thing, but North Korea as well.
Yeah.
Can you trust a United States that's led by someone who's obviously cognitively affected, maybe minorly, it looks like extremely? You've got people like Blinken, who's a dual Israeli-American citizen, so who he bats for, it's hard to say. Jake Sullivan, who seems to be always in the background. The legacy of Victoria Nuland, it goes way back. And Lloyd Austin in there as well, a former board member of Raytheon, the industrial military complex. It looks to me like you really can't put too much faith in the top part of the administration, not only the United States, but any war-fighting machine. It seems to be kind of in disarray. Is that how you see it?
Well, I was shocked, Paul, by the fact that the United States' position towards Gaza and unconditional support for Israel is inconsistent with its position towards Ukraine. What do I mean by that? It's supporting one country, Ukraine, against the prospect of occupation by a neighboring country. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem to have the same reservations. In fact, it's given unconditional support for Israel to carry out what, in Mr. Netanyahu's words, were a policy of mighty vengeance against Hamas. The problem is that this blanket approach doesn't seem to be able to adequately distinguish between Palestinian civilians who have nothing to do with Hamas and the Hamas militants or the Hamas fighters. Now, don't get me wrong, the Hamas attack on Israel was pretty appalling, but there was a context to that. And that is to say, Gaza has been under a 16-year-old blockade. If Israel is seriously interested in defanging or weakening Hamas, it should be giving a pathway to the Palestinians for national political self-determination. So, yeah, I think the American policy on Gaza has isolated the United States under Mr. Biden. And I'm very surprised by the Biden administration, because Mr. Biden, he was vice president to Mr. Obama, and that's when relations with Israel were quite rocky. So he has no illusions about Mr. Netanyahu. It may be that Mr. Biden thought, with an election looming, from his point of view, he had to play it safe and get fully behind the Netanyahu government in order to see off an anticipated charge from the Trump, the Trump Republicans. He feared perhaps he was not backing Israel enough. I think he feared the charge from Mr. Trump that you're letting down your closest strategic ally in the Middle East at a time when it needs help. I think he's probably overcompensated by giving unconditional support. And clearly, that unconditional support has led to the deaths of more than 37,000 Palestinians, including 15,000 children, who, according to Matthew Miller, the State Department spokesman, children by definition are not Hamas terrorists. So, I'd have to agree that the Biden administration, the coherence of their foreign policy has been seriously strained in its reaction to the Hamas terror attack on the 7th of October last year.
And just to sum up, isn't it funny that 4 years ago, or about that long ago, here was Donald Trump shaking the hand of Kim Jong-un? Perhaps that was a better position to be in. At least you're talking. I know we don't like these people, but at least they're talking. So it's been a 180 since then. It's incredible. It can happen in such a short time. Or maybe it's not.
It is. But I think there's a lesson for Mr. Trump as well as Mr. Biden. And that is, you can't solve political problems through military force alone. And let's be quite clear. Some of us said at the beginning of the Israeli retaliation against the Hamas attack on the 7th of October, there was no military solution. Here we are, 8 months down the track, Paul, this has been an appalling situation, a stain on humanity, as what has occurred in Gaza. I mean, there's been a bonfire of international law, and war crimes have been committed. But at the end of the day, has that made Netanyahu's Israel any safer? I don't think so.
It might have made it more vulnerable.
Yes, and which means, why hasn't the United States been saying to Netanyahu, please rethink your strategy? And why have they been enabling it? I mean, and the other big question is, for the other liberal democracies, including our own, why haven't we been asking the Biden administration to rethink its policy? After all, you know, if you see a friend in trouble, do you remain silent, or do you draw attention to a course of action they're taking, which is undermining themselves? I mean, there is a case, you know, if the Biden administration comes out of this pretty poorly, I think a lot of the liberal democracies that have remained silent also do as well.
Professor Papman, thank you so much for sharing your views with us. Really appreciate it. A lot to think about there. Interesting. And it'd be nice to have you back again sometime. So thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.